This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll look ahead to some of the key issues which will face lawmakers when they return to Albany next week. The last couple of months have not been easy ones for the New York Corrections Commissioner, Thomas Coughlin. He's taken some heavy shots, particularly from minority members of the legislature. But with the backing of his boss, Governor Mario Cuomo, Coughlin is weathering the storm. Rick Lepkowski prepared this report.
For many years, Thomas Coughlin has been regarded as one of the best commissioners of any of the state agencies. But in recent months, the corrections commissioner has come under fire from the Black and Puerto Rican caucus in the legislature and from State Senator Israel Ruiz of the Bronx, who charges Coughlin was part of a bid-rigging scheme in awarding a prison food services contract. The most recent incident involved statements made to the editorial board of Capital Newspapers in Albany. Coughlin seemed to suggest that it was blacks and Hispanics who are responsible for crime in New York State, because many minority youths come from homes with no father figures, so they turn to drug pushers and other social deviants. The white middle class birth rate is declining, Coughlin went on, while the black birth rate remains stable and the rate among Hispanics continues to rise. And Coughlin concluded that minorities in their late teens to early 30s remain the prime prison-prone population. These statements angered members of the legislature's Black and Puerto Rican caucus, and the caucus called for Coughlin's resignation. At the end of 1984, Hispanics represented 26% of the state prison population, blacks 51%, and whites 22%. But Assemblyman Roger Green of Brooklyn says Coughlin's statements send a signal to minority youth of downtrodden hopelessness.
That even before they are born, the state correction system is preparing to lock them up with under the misconception that by locking them up, the crime rate will go down. Now, that is Coughlin's statement. Okay, he indicated that that Hispanic children and the crime rate is in correlation, that as there are more Hispanic children being born within this society, that we can expect the crime rate to go up, and that when, in fact, we begin the process of arresting these children, arresting these youth, the crime rate will go down. Okay, the serious subliminal messages of hopelessness that that sends to our youth, as well as the dangerous message that it sends to those people who are in positions of authority within the correction system, is a clear and present danger to us.
The caucus has called on Governor Cuomo to call for the resignation of Commissioner Coughlin and is demanding the governor repudiate the commissioner's statements. In addition, the caucus is circulating petitions around the state calling for Coughlin's ouster. And on April 25th, it will hold the first in a series of public hearings around the state to discuss the reasons why minorities make up a disproportionate amount of the inmates in our prisons. Deputy Speaker of the Assembly, Arthur Eve of Buffalo.
Some of us have said that all of one group belongs to the mafia, or that all of one group were the ones who were committing crimes in other countries. I'm sure that others in responsible positions would have responded and repudiated. Many of us are upset that Coughlin can acknowledge that because we're having babies, the crime is going to go up, and that subsequently he's going to arrest more of our children, and therefore crime will go down. Coughlin has done something that I have never seen done in 19 years of being a member of this body, and he is trying to institutionalize and to justify racism. And we're frightened and we're concerned and we're going to fight it with every ounce of energy and organizational skills that we have to bring Coughlin down and to have this governor apologize and to repudiate and separate himself from those remarks.
But Governor Cuomo has stood behind his corrections commissioner, tall and firm. The governor has said Coughlin is one of the finest public servants in state government, and he stands firm in support of the commissioner. In a recent edition of the Capital Connection program, the governor said Coughlin is not a racist and that the commissioner simply misspoke.
I met with the caucus. There were members of that caucus here who cried. Literally cried tears. There was no television camera. There was no recording device. It was all off the record. They weren't putting on a show to con the governor. They were sincerely upset that the language had offended them deeply. The language, they believed, offended their children. And they were serious about their reaction. And I'm understanding, or I try to be understanding of it, and I think I do understand it. I do not agree that Tom Coughlin should be replaced or asked to resign. I mean, every evidence indicates that Coughlin treats this problem and this population superbly well. Under those circumstances, to ask him to resign or to fire him because he chose the wrong words to express what he believes, what I believe, and what the caucus believes. Because if you study what Tom Coughlin really believes, there is nothing offensive in what he really believes to the caucus. It's just the words he used. Everyone in that caucus has at one time or another used words that he or she would have retracted. This governor certainly has. Previous governors have. The President of the United States has. Everybody in this business does. To suggest that if they use the wrong words, they should be fired doesn't make sense.
Commissioner Coughlin has written a letter to the Black and Puerto Rican caucus apologizing for his remarks, saying the statement could have been, quote, more artfully presented. In the four-page letter, the commissioner detailed his statements, saying it is his belief that race is not the cause of crime, but rather unemployment, inadequate housing, lack of education, and broken homes. Coughlin went on to say, it is important to recognize the changing makeup of the inmate population, so we are prepared to relate to the growing Hispanic prison population. Commissioner Coughlin has also come under fire from State Senator Israel Ruiz, who accuses Coughlin of bid rigging involving a prison food services contract the Corrections Department awarded to Sabo Food Services Incorporated. Ruiz, too, has called for Coughlin's resignation, claiming lies and cynical deception in issuing the contract. The senator charges that Coughlin was wined and dined by Sabo officials on a recent trip to Mississippi paid for by Sabo. Other members of the Department of Corrections also made a trip to Sabo headquarters in Illinois at the company's expense. The public officers law in New York State specifically states that no officer or employee of a state agency can accept a gift having more than a value of $25, including travel, entertainment, or hospitality. Senator Ruiz claims that Coughlin's trip to Mississippi breaks that law.
It seems that Mr. Coughlin took a trip to Mississippi, and letters from his deputy commissioner also stated that he not only took the trip to Mississippi, but to Illinois. And again, Mr. Coughlin says that that was a misinterpretation of the letter. But the letter is very clearly written that says that he went to Mississippi and to Illinois.
And it's your contention that the Sabo Food Services Incorporated paid for that trip?
Well, they did. No, they admitted that they paid not only for the commissioner's trip to Mississippi, but they also paid for the employees, the deputy commissioners that went with the commissioner. And they also paid for the deputy commissioners that went to Illinois for their expenses also. And then what I am saying to a large extent is that the contract which was given to Sabo was a contract which, by its process, by the way they came about giving that contract, shows that they undermine every other bidder to make sure that Sabo got the contract and that the other people had no chance whatsoever of getting the contract.
But Commissioner Coughlin refutes these claims and maintains everything he did securing the contract with Sabo was by the book. Ruiz says the trip violated the public officers law. Coughlin says no, and says that contention is upheld by the Corrections Department's legal counsel, the governor's legal counsel, Gerald Crotty, and the Office of General Services. Corrections Department spokesman Jim Flatow.
Our counsel agrees. OGS has no problem with it. The controller requires in contracts that if state auditors have to go out of state to look at books and things like that, that the vendor picks up the cost.
And did Sabo pick up the cost for the trip to Mississippi?
The commissioner's already answered that. Yes, it did.
Coughlin says he was not wined and dined by Sabo officials as charged by Ruiz, saying they ate prison food prepared by the company and inspected the overall food preparation operation. They stayed the night at the local Holiday Inn and flew back to New York the following day. In addition, Coughlin charges that Ruiz made his bid rigging charges in retaliation for the issuing of a food services contract for the South Bronx prison. That contract was awarded to the firm of Sanchez Figueros, and Coughlin claims that Senator Ruiz wanted the contract to go to the firm of Delgado Hugo. Delgado Hugo contributed to Ruiz's election campaign in 1984, claims the commissioner. In a February 4th budget hearing, Senator Ruiz was quoted as saying to Coughlin, "I owe you one for the South Bronx prison." Although the Ruiz allegations and the controversial statements concerning minorities and the prison population has received quite a bit of press these past few months, Coughlin's reputation as one of the best commissioners in state government appears to have been little tarnished, and in the mind of the governor, Coughlin's boss, the corrections commissioner, is still one of the best. In Albany, I'm Rick Lepkowski.
This week, Governor Cuomo confirmed that he will be doing 3 commentaries a week on the Mutual Radio Network. If, as he claims, he is a neophyte at that sort of thing, he could always turn to this man, this consummate commentator, this accomplished analyst, this venerated verbalist, Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
The legislature comes back to Albany Monday after 2 weeks of rest, far-flung vacations, and local district work, presumably ready to tackle the dozen or so key issues which remain for this year's legislative session. For the past half dozen years, the legislature has tended to finish its work in the last week of June, and there's no reason to believe things will be different this time around. No one major issue remains outstanding on the legislative calendar, although there are at least a dozen important items on the agenda. They range in interest from the highly specific, as in the case of efforts to reduce medical malpractice costs for doctors, to the far more general, like Governor Cuomo's proposal to hike the drinking age to 21. Criminal justice issues will be a major subject on the agenda, brought into focus by 3 important proposals. These include a plan to change the state's current system of indeterminate or indefinite prison sentences with a supposedly tougher and more certain system of fixed or determined sentences. That plan, which faces stiff legislative resistance, would also abolish the state parole board's role in deciding when a prison inmate should be released. Also to be considered are proposals to allow judges and not lawyers to pick juries, an effort to speed trial time, and a change in the immunity statute, a move designed to make it harder for criminals to escape punishment by intentionally disclosing their crimes to grand juries. Senior citizens will want to watch closely as the legislature tackles 2 different plans to have the state pay for prescription drugs for the elderly. One proposal could cost upwards of $100 million and be a major benefit to tens of thousands of poor, elderly New Yorkers. Banking and insurance bills, almost always guaranteed to produce glazed eyeballs, will be on the agenda as well, and their impact could affect us all. Cuomo wants insurance companies to be able to get into the banking business, and he wants the banks to be able to sell all kinds of insurance. A lot of controversy here, and there's sure to be days of debate. The environment will be a big issue in the coming weeks also. Cuomo is pushing for legislative approval of a $700 million bond issue to clean up hazardous and toxic waste sites. To win ultimate approval, the plan must pass 2 separately elected legislatures and then go to the voters for a final okay. That means the plan couldn't reach the voters until 1987 at the earliest. The legislature must also address the need to find an in-state dumping ground for low-level nuclear wastes. Other measures on the calendar will deal with housing regulations for New York City, always a politically explosive issue, fingerprinting of child care workers, a response to the continuing widespread national reports of child molestation, and the reorganization of the State University of New York. There will be plenty of things to keep us busy in the weeks to come. With the budget out of the way and the legislature returning to Albany, summer recess is really only just around the corner. At the Capitol, this is Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
With the budget finally out of the way, the decks are clear for other battles, ones in which the rank-and-file lawmakers will have more of a say than they did in the closed budget negotiations. We talked about some of those issues with Republican Senator Charles Cook.
Senator, we are now through phase one of the legislative process, the budget. Now come some of the more substantive issues. You're an expert on the Republican side of the Senate, which is in the majority. What do you see as the big issues that are coming up?
I think that probably we will have to do something with a bond issue for solid waste. I think everybody's pretty well agreed on that.
Why is that such a compelling issue?
Pardon?
Why is that such a compelling
issue?
Well,
because our municipalities are really getting backed into a corner. They just don't know where to go, and it's such a terribly expensive thing to do anything with. And the municipalities, frankly, don't have the bonding capacity, for the most part, to underwrite the cost of this.
Now, how do you feel about bonding? Isn't this something that you, in particular, have had some real problems
yeah,
with?
Yeah, I'm concerned about that because it does add to our annual cost tremendously. The problem you have with something like hazardous waste, though, is that you've got to deal with the problem, that it is a problem you're dealing with prospectively. And it's not the same thing as the transportation bond issue, which I think when you look at this year's budget, you'll find that my fears have been borne out, that there's an awful lot of revenue going in through the back door, as it were, to bloat this budget that isn't showing up in anybody's taxes this year. Mm-hmm. However, when you get to the hazardous waste, we don't have a state program in which there is a revenue stream. And I think it is a kind of a capital expenditure that's got to be made. So I would support a bond issue for that purpose.
Okay, what else is coming up?
Well, our annual battle over New York City housing laws will be up, and I assume that we'll be treated to all the showmanship that always goes with those. And
things like rent control
and
that sort of thing.
And there are a number of programs in which there are various tax breaks given to landowners and landlords in New York City in exchange for which tenants receive certain tax certain rent breaks and so on. And that becomes a sort of an annual ritualistic dance in Albany in which we go through a lot of motions.
How do you, as an upstate senator, feel about that?
Well, as an upstate senator, I wish New York City would take care of their own problems, but we seem to have been saddled with this historically, so we sit and endure it. The problem is that the city can't deal with the thing politically, internally, because if they did what they have to do politically down there, they would utterly destroy the city. Mm-hmm. So in order to save themselves from the political pressure, it's been tossed into the laps of the state legislature. That way the city representatives can vote the way that their constituents want them to vote, knowing that the upstate mm-hmm. people will do what has to be done.
Can we talk toxic torts for a moment?
Yes.
Last year, the Republicans in the Senate got beat up a little bit because the chairman of the committee, Ron Stafford, wanted to pass a toxic tort bill which would have allowed people who had been involved with DES, the drug, to sue for years afterwards. And the conference, the Republican conference, said no. I'm hearing now that there will be some kind of an accommodation on that bill because politically it begins to be very sensitive. Is that your sense of things?
Well, actually, there never was any problem with DES, and there was never any problem with the heavy metal thing. The whole issue revolved around asbestosis.
Mm-hmm.
And if there had been a willingness on the part of people to separate the two issues out and to deal with DES, there wouldn't have been a problem.
I see, as an individual problem rather than a class.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that DES, we know how many people there are, roughly.
Right.
The problem with the asbestosis thing is so broad.
Which is a disease that comes from asbestos, which we didn't know was bad before, and we know now, right?
Well, everybody in the world has been exposed to asbestos.
Right.
And so there's no way of knowing how broad that issue may be.
That's very interesting.
And if you simply bankrupt the company, you then nobody gets anything anyway. Mm-hmm. So the issue in our mind is that you've got to find a way of opening the door to those people who have suffered legitimate damage from it, who can be accommodated within the capability of the company or the insurance companies to pay for it, but not do it in such a way that you simply drive everybody into bankruptcy and therefore deprive the very people who really justly should get some compensation from getting it.
Charlie, what about insurance companies versus the banks in terms of banks selling insurance? Do you see that peaking this year?
No, I don't think that that's going to happen. My guess is that because there are a lot of independent insurance agents out there who are more, they're apt to suffer. And I doubt that the people in either party, in either house, are really anxious to give a lot of additional power to the banks in the insurance field, particularly if it's going to be to the detriment of the individual independent insurance agents, who of whom there are thousands and thousands across the state.
And they're pretty politically viable in each of the districts.
Well, exactly. I think that's a realistic point, that they are respected people within their own communities. That's one thing. And the second thing is that they are locally owned businesses, whereas the banks, for the most part, have become consolidated and are owned by people in God knows where.
What about the sexy issues, death penalty?
Well, we're going to, that's another ritual dance. We'll override. The assembly will not override. And I think that chapter has been written for this year.
Do you see it as in any way moving off center? In other words, do you see any movement towards or away from a death penalty in terms of pressure people are putting on their legislators?
No, I don't. I read that the assembly is thinking about some kind of a different approach next year, and I suppose that that's possible, but it seems to me that the bill that was written is almost what the United States Supreme Court says has to be. Mm-hmm. You have to have the second trial. You have to determine all of the mitigating circumstances that may be involved before you impose the death penalty. You may change some words around, but in the last analysis, that's going to have to be what it is. As far as the governor's proposal for life without parole, that is totally unacceptable to, I think, to a vast majority of the Republicans, and I suspect a majority of the Democrats. If you are a correction officer and you've got this LaMail Smith sitting in your prison, you sure don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. What's the single hottest issue you, Charlie Cook, are going to have to face this year?
Probably the biggest thing that I'll have to face is the drinking age.
Mm-hmm.
The governor has said that it's on the top of his priority list. And
the feds will take away the highway money if you don't
well,
do it.
Well, yeah, but the issue to me...
Let me just make sure our listeners understand we're talking about the 21-year-old purchase age.
Yeah, and the governor has insisted that the quicker the better. He wants to get it passed. He says number one priority for the remainder of the session. Mm-hmm. I believe the year is 1986 in October when we have to do this under the federal law.
And under the old legislative edict, why do it before you have to do
it? Well, the point is, I think there is a considerable imposition upon people's personal right to make their own decision.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about kids. We're talking about adults here, people who are 18, 19 years of age, between 19 and 21, who we have changed every law in the state, practically, to say that these people are adults. And now we're saying that Joe Smith, who has a job, has a mortgage on his house, and debt on his car, wife and two kids, cannot make the decision to stop at a bar and buy a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, I think you are really infringing upon somebody's individual rights of discretion. Now, we apparently are going to have to do this, but I don't see any reason why the state of New York should do it earlier than necessary.
Senator Charles Cook. So, ladies and gentlemen, coming right up, part two of the legislative show. On your right in ring number one, toxic torts. The Senate Republicans are feeling the heat on this one, and it's a cinch they'd like some relief. So, for the mothers of the DES children and for those young women who were once DES babies, there'll probably be some legislation. Victims will be allowed to sue for longer and more reasonable periods to recover damages. But the fight will be over the rest of the language. What about all the other toxics besides DES? What about asbestos, for example? There are some things that couldn't have been foreseen. Legislation that will put whole industries into bankruptcy is of questionable value. So that is what the negotiations will be about. The 21-year-old drinking age is looking good because the feds will take away the federal highway money, they say, if the state doesn't pass such a bill. But at least one state is suing to avoid having to pay that penalty, and Governor Mario M. Cuomo is still indignant that the feds are twisting our arms on the matter. But if Senator Cook is right, and the legislators have an extra session to fool around before they have to respond to the federal mandate, you can be sure that they will want to wait. But, on the other hand, they may be thinking that this year the 21-year-olds and the bar owners will have a whole year to forget before the next election if it's passed. If they wait until next year, they will have no such grace period. Still another issue is the death penalty. We all know that this perpetual red herring is going nowhere this year. So forget it. Most people want it. Some key pals don't. So as I say, forget it. The bankers want to sell insurance. The governor's for it. So is Assemblyman Farrell, the important chairman of the banking committee. But Senator Cook is clearly right. The independent insurance agents are too powerful. Forget about it. The governor wants a major housing bonding initiative. There's some money in the budget for housing, but not the kind Cuomo wanted. Forget it. The governor wants a major initiative for hazardous waste cleanup. He's had some success with this kind of bonding issue in the past, but people don't like indebting themselves or their children. Possible, but doubt it. Probably, forget it. So as of now, it doesn't appear to me that we can expect anything too dramatic, but spring fever is just beginning, and the dog days of summer are coming on. Once the trading between the Republicans in the Senate and the Democrats in the Assembly begin, anything can happen. And if past years are any clue, it will. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government and politics. Bill Gralty edits and produces this program. Rick Lepkowski is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC, Box 13,000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.